welcome to Talk is Jericho. It's the Pod of Thunder and Rock and Roll, and it is Friday, and it is the eve, only a few days until SummerSlam, and today's guest is challenging for the Universal Championship for Raw, the WWE Universal title versus Seth Rollins. I'm talking about Finn Balor. Finn returns to Talk is Jericho for the first time of being on the Raw roster and challenging for a world championship in his very first pay-per-view. Finn is very excited. Finn is very humble. Finn is a very good guy. We're talking about his time in NXT, whether he was surprised or not at being drafted to Raw, his upcoming SummerSlam main event match against Seth Rollins, and of course we're talking about the Demon and Balloween. Balloween, probably be better. You know, it's going to be huge. Balloween, man. I'm sure a lot of kids will be wearing the Demon King costume this Halloween. It's going to be huge. Finn Balor is the next biggest star here in the WWE. But before we get to Finn, got a quick little interview with my son, Ash, the fish expert, and his friend, Julian. I took them to see Kiss a few weeks ago in Moline, Illinois. It was both Ash and Julian's first time seeing Kiss, and Kiss was the ultimate band to see for a couple of 12-year-old kids. Paul Stanley, Gene Simmons, Tommy Thayer, Eric Singer, all tremendous, tremendous people. Great guys. They gave Ash and Julian the royal treatment, and you're going to hear their thoughts from Ash, the fish expert, and Julian right now. All right, we are here in Moline, Illinois, the night after we saw Kiss, the Freedom to Rock tour. Ash is here, and Julian is here. And you guys are almost basically 12 years old.
And we both are.
Just got to see Kiss for the first time ever. What'd you think?
Amazing. I don't think anything will ever live up to that standard again.
That was the best concert ever. The only thing that could beat it is a better Kiss concert.
So tell us a little bit about your day. I mean, you guys got the full meal deal of every single thing you could get.
Yeah, I mean, we started off and we were just went backstage, you know, got our passes and tickets. Then we walked around, met Paul Stanley. I want to stress that we met Paul Stanley and talked to him. Paul Stanley.
I was shaking so much.
Oh, yeah. I thought he was going to, like, die of a heart attack.
Because, Julian, you have a band, too, and when you told him that you play I Love It Loud, what did he say?
You can teach me how to play it.
Yeah. And he was talking about your guys' hair, and he was asking questions about what you guys are doing in school, and what a great guy.
Oh, yeah.
He's better than I expected him to be.
What were you expecting him to be like?
I expected him to be a nice guy, but he was even nicer than I could have imagined.
Yeah. Just so gracious and... It took us backstage. We ate catering back there. We were going to go have something to eat. He wouldn't let us go.
Yeah.
Let us go. And then you get to see the acoustic show.
And we got to see. Yeah. Oh, yeah. That was pretty awesome. And Gene's a pretty funny guy. I'm just going
to
leave it
at that. Yeah, we'll just leave it at that.
Well, tell us a little about Gene. What did he do to you, Julian?
So I was wearing my Iron Maiden shirt because I don't own any Kiss shirts.
And you got a lot of crap for it.
I tried to find Kiss shirts, but I just never see them. So I'm wearing my Iron Maiden shirt, and they're all making jokes about it. Like, that was just an opening band for us. And
yeah, Paul said you
like
can't
that.
Wear a T-shirt from one of our opening bands.
And then Gene comes over, and he's like, you want to see a magic trick? And he comes over, and he puts his arm over the Iron Maiden logo, and he says, it disappeared. And then he moved his hand, he's like, it's back.
Yeah, he was
and
mad.
And then he puts it back, it's gone.
He was mad that you had the Iron Maiden shirt on. It was great, too, because when I saw him, he said, as he was leaving, he goes, you got something on your arm, talking about my tattoos? You got something on your arm? I said, yeah, that's the same thing he said to me last time I saw you. He goes, I'm old. and then at the acoustic gig, what else is he doing, Ash?
Oh, gosh.
Yeah, you're going to have to explain this.
First off, he walked over after the acoustic thing. We got a picture with him, and then he balanced, you know, a drum. He took one of the drumsticks that Eric had given us, started bouncing on his nose, and then it fell. He picked it up, put it between his legs, and like
bent over, and like it was like he was using like it was a tail or like a wiener or something.
It was scary.
You guys were laughing so hard. He's bent over and he had the drumstick between his legs, and he was like shaking it at you guys.
Yeah, it was like. How did you respond to that? It's like, I'm like, crap.
He goes, I can't remember what he said. He's like, oh, he's laughing. He goes, you're teaching him well.
He's like, ah, oh, he's like, boom.
So then we hung out some more at catering, and then we got to take a picture with them when they all had their makeup on.
Which was really cool.
That was intimidating. Awesome.
What did you think when you meet them without their makeup, and then you see them with the makeup on?
Totally different people. They, like, completely just get that character of, you know, Star Child.
Demon, Catman, Spaceman.
It's just...
How tall they are, too.
It's crazy. Like, I knew they were going to be tall, but they were like, ah.
Yeah, there's like 7 feet tall with the big giant boots on and stuff.
Which is cool.
So then we go and sit down. Where do they have us sit?
They had us sit at the sound stage, which was in the middle of a fence with everything in front of us. There was the lights panels that were controlling the lights.
Yeah, we were at the soundboard. Yeah,
the soundboard. And, you know, right in front of us, there was a stage that Paul would fly onto, which was awesome, too.
So tell us about the show. What are some of the highlights that you saw? There's so many effects and so many...
Oh, my gosh, yeah, it's crazy. It's, like, got everything a concert should have. Explosions, you know, lights, lasers.
Lasers are cool.
Yeah.
My favorite was when Paul came over to the platform and he looked down at us and just pointed at us. That was cool.
Yeah, if I got that on video. I posted on Instagram. It was like, yeah, when Starchild flies across the arena to his platform and instantly recognizes you, it's a pretty cool thing.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, what else did you see? You put your phone down. It's your first podcast.
Yeah, I was going on Instagram to see the video that
you
posted.
We can watch it after.
Yeah.
What else did you remember? What else was it?
When Gene's throwing up blood and then started flying. I knew he was going to do it on God of Thunder because I've seen videos of it.
Mm-hmm.
But you have to see it to really, really enjoy it.
Yeah. And it was funny too, Ash, because you were kind of zoning out for a bit. You were kind of falling asleep.
Around, the sixth song, Shock Me. I was getting delirious. Like, I honestly would like half fall asleep, wake up, and there'd be like, you know, like something on the screen. It was just like in the background.
You're seeing hallucinations?
And I was literally seeing hallucinations. And then, around...
It was at the end of Shock Me when Tommy had his solo.
Yeah, and that's kind of... No. It was after... No. It started at Psycho Circus, and then it ended at Shock Me.
Right, but then when Tommy had a solo and he was shooting all the bombs off his guitar...
Which is awesome, yeah.
You were like, that's a guitar hero right there.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was cool to me, too, to watch you guys see Kiss for the first time, because you're about the same age as I was when I first saw Kiss on the Animalize tour back in 1984. And obviously, it was a different Kiss, but Kiss has always been, you know, bombs and then lasers and cool gimmicks and platforms and rising, you know, things off the stage and stuff. So it was cool to watch you guys see it for the first time, you know, Gene breathing fire and all that stuff.
That was pretty cool.
Yeah. And, you know, it's a cool experience for me to watch you guys check it out.
Oh, and I think... Yeah, and, you know, towards the end of the show when they started playing Rock and Roll All Night and Party Every Day,
mm-hmm.
These two guys came up to us and said, do you want to shoot the confetti cannons?
That was like, awesome.
We literally shot, 100 pounds of confetti into, the crowd.
It was crazy, and the guy started just picking them out of the bucket and throwing at people that were walking by.
So what was your job? What did you have to do?
He'd give me, like this, and I turn the thing down and then start dumping confetti in, and it'll just go...
So you dump confetti into, like, the air blower that shoots it out.
It was so cool. Weird, because it was, like, compressed air leading to a vacuum, and the vacuum would just suck in the confetti and then spit it back out with the compressed air. And it was, like, making smoke, and they were straight...
Yeah.
It was amazing.
That was so cool. I've never got to load the confetti cannon before. I'm jealous of you guys. That's great. Then afterwards, we went and hung out. We waited for Paul, and they gave us, like, how many shirts did they give us?
Oh, 60.
60?
Like, all of the shirts.
Yeah.
We have all of the shirts.
If anybody wants a Kiss shirt, just, we should have a contest.
Yeah.
At Talk is Jericho. If you want a Kiss shirt, hashtag, what should we hashtag be? Kiss Ash? Kiss Ash. There you go. Hashtag Kiss Ash. That's KISSASH. And you could win a Kiss t-shirt that the boys will give you. Because literally, they gave us, I think, 10 of each kind. Except for the ones that we wanted. We had to send them back to the merch stand to get more. Right?
I still don't think he got the one that he wanted.
Yeah.
I didn't, but I'm happy with what I got in
the
end.
Either way. And then we got to meet Paul at the end again. We waited for him to get his makeup off and... Once again, cool. He was really excited to hear you guys' opinions and thoughts on Kiss, right?
Yeah.
You got to ask him your question, Julian?
Yeah.
What'd you ask him?
I asked him what his favorite Kiss album was, and like I was expecting, he said Alive.
Mm-hmm. I think that's probably best. He usually says, like, Monster. He says, our newest one's my favorite. I think that's just promotionally.
Yeah.
I think Kiss Alive is probably the best Kiss record for sure, you know? I think... I just, once again, just what an experience. Like,
oh, my gosh, yeah. You know what I forgot to say is there was like a, what, like a hundred, no, like the disco ball, a huge disco ball.
Giant disco ball.
Yeah, and they were playing around with Black Diamond. That was cool.
Oh, yeah, yeah. The Black Diamond was great with when the drum riser goes up. And just a great show overall, and lots of fun. And the guys couldn't have been any nicer. The whole crew was great.
Oh, my gosh.
They took a... Tell them about your shirt for Coach Akins.
Okay, so we have a coach at our school. Shout out to Coach Akins. and we got one of the security guards.
Yeah.
To go around and get, you know, Paul, Tom, Eric, and Gene to sign a shirt for him, which is awesome.
Because he's a good teacher?
Because he's a good teacher.
And he likes Kiss, huh?
Yeah.
It should be a good surprise for him. That's that was pretty cool of you guys to do that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Last question, what was your favorite song of the night? Ash or Julian, want to go first?
As always, I have two favorite songs. These are definitely my favorite Kiss songs, is Love Gun and Black Diamond. And he flew on Love Gun, and that was just awesome.
He's like literally right in front of us.
Yeah.
Right in front of us.
And he put us there. Remember, he said, I'm going to fly out there. You guys, he said, put him by the platform. So, and then Paul said he was watching us the whole show.
Yeah, that was crazy. I think my favorite were the opening and closing, Detroit Rock City, and
Rock and Roll All Night.
Rock and Roll All Night and Party Every Day. And I mean, I know it's kind of mainstream, but they're good songs. They're good songs.
My favorite, I think Lick It Up was my favorite because they did that breakdown in the middle where they played Won't Get Fooled Again by The Who.
Yeah.
And that's when all the lasers were shooting around and they went up on the platform. I just thought, like, just for a random song, they put so much effort and so much production into Lick It Up.
Yeah, it's like, what's
this? You know, and everyone knows I love 80s Kiss, and that was basically the only 80s Kiss song they played without makeup. But it's just a great time, and I'm glad I got to hang out with you guys. And now we have to go get some breakfast and get back on the plane and go home.
Ooh.
Can you believe it's over?
Nah.
No, it's still going on in my head.
You got a last message for Kiss?
Rock on.
I'd say thank you would be good.
Oh, yeah, thank you.
Yeah, I was going to say thank you, but you have a different thing in mind.
No, thank you, Kiss.
All right, here we go. Love Gun, baby.
Whoa.
All right, big thanks to my boy Paul Stanley, good friend of mine. Gene Simmons, a good guy as well. Tommy and Eric and the entire Kiss camp for the amazing experience in the show. As you could hear, we had a great time. And speaking of great times, come out to the Talk is Jericho live podcast featuring my special guest Christian this Sunday at Caroline's on Broadway in Times Square. The fun starts at 10 a.m. with a VIP breakfast. You got to get a special VIP breakfast ticket to hang out with me and Christian. And then at 11 o'clock, 11 a.m., we start the Talk is Jericho live podcast. I promise you're going to laugh your heads off. I know a lot of stuff about Christian. We have great chemistry. Then from 12 until 2, it's an autograph signing. It's a Q&A. Lots of stuff going on. Obviously, you have plenty of time to head on over to the Barclays Center for SummerSlam. 15 minutes away, Caroline's on Broadway. We'll have you there with time to spare. So come out to Caroline's on Broadway, Times Square, New York City. This Sunday officially starts at 11 a.m., VIP breakfast at 10 a.m. The 11 a.m. is when the live Talk is Jericho podcast starts featuring special guest Christian. If you want tickets, just go to lifestylesportsgroup.events. That is lifestylesportsgroup.events. And pick up a ticket for this hilarious, hilarious Sunday morning extravaganza. It's Talk is Jericho live in New York City with Christian as my guest. We're going to be there tearing it up at Caroline's. We will see you on Sunday. Lots of laughs. And if you're looking for more laughs and stories, in this case, utter ridiculous stories, you need to subscribe to the new Team Tiger Awesome Show podcast. at iTunes, the second podcast on the Jericho Network, and that debut episode of the Team Tiger Awesome Show drops this Sunday. I guarantee that Monday, Truly Engage will have you laughing your asses off like they do every single week, like they did last episode, Who's Hot and Who's Not. Definitely one of the most ridiculous podcasts I've ever been a part of, and one of my favorite. I love those guys. They're three modern-day stooges, very, very funny guys, pop culture experts, and they got away with great chemistry. It's hilarious. They are the ones that I've chosen to be the second podcast on the Jericho Network. The first one, Keeping It 100 with Conan, is a huge hit. Thank you so much for listening and subscribing to Keeping It 100 with Conan. Another great episode this week with Eric Bischoff talking about Conor McGregor. Also, they're talking about CM Punk, how they think he's going to do in UFC. Lots of great stuff. Juventud Guerrera gets ribbed, which is hilarious. Two great shows on the Jericho Network, Keeping It 100 with Conan and the Team Tiger Awesome Show. Subscribe and leave your comments now. And also do the Jericho Network a solid. Like I said, leave them a 5-star rating and a killer review. And do it for myself as well. Okay, I'm asking you to do a lot of stuff. Now I'm going to give you something. Okay, Finn Balor made his WWE main roster debut on Raw with a huge, huge statement. He beat Roman Reigns to become the number one contender for the WWE Universal Championship. This Sunday, he's going to take on Seth Rollins. There will be a new champion this Sunday. His first pay-per-view is a main event championship match. We're going to talk all about that and so much more.
Talk is Jericho.
All right, so here in Sydney on the long end of a long tour with the newest WWE sensation, Finn Balor. And what do you think of this tour so far?
I got to be honest, I done this tour last year as I think I was NXT champion when I came down.
Mm.
And it was, I've been touring like 14 years at that point. And this tour last year was the most difficult tour I've ever experienced in my whole life, just with the travel. And it was just relentless early mornings, like 5 a.m. wake up calls, like 2-3 hour flights to the town,
yeah,
and get a workout in, then work the show. And you know, every day was the same. And then, you know, it kind of takes its toll. But this one, man, it's been great.
It's been fun.
Yeah. I've been feeling good, feeling healthy, energetic. And
is it fun for you now too, because you mentioned like last year, and just to fill in what he's saying, is that it's been a show every night with a flight every morning. So I think sometimes people don't understand that in itself is really hard, so to work, like, and then, you know, 3-4 hours sleep.
Yeah, so like even just a couple of minutes ago, I had a text from one of my best friends who lives in Dubai now.
Mm.
And he texted me and he said, "Hey man, I seen you're in Melbourne. How long are you staying? I'm flying into Melbourne tomorrow. Maybe we can hang out." Man, I'm already in Sydney. He goes, "What? Like you had a show there last night." I was like, "Yeah, I'm already in Sydney today. We got a show.
With Adelaide in between. Melbourne was 2 days ago now."
Actually, you're right. Yeah.
That's the thing, right? Yeah. But I mean, the thing that to me is fun for you this time too is, like you mentioned, last year you were there as NXT champion.
Yeah.
You know, this year you're here as a member of the WWE roster.
Yeah.
It's been a long time coming, man. I mean, that must be something that finally is like, I did it.
You know what? It's kind of bittersweet because...
Really?
You know, obviously, I came and signed with WWE with the intention of being on Raw and being on SmackDown and, you know, pay-per-views and WrestleMania, SummerSlam. But NXT turned into something that I really fell in love with and really felt like I, you know, contributed a lot and, you know, became a big part of me. And even last night at the show, I heard like a promo package playing on the big screen for the NXT tour of Australia. And I literally thought like, oh, that's me. I'm coming down here. And then I had to like double back and go, oh, no, I'm not. I'm
already here.
Yeah. So it's bittersweet. Obviously, like the long term objective is to be here in WWE. But you know, NXT is something that I still hold very special.
Because like you said, you became kind of almost the face of the company down there. And I mean, obviously, once in a while, you still have your Coral Springs, Florida shows.
Yeah.
But you're also going into the Barclays Center and selling it out. You're going to wherever it was you guys were, like in Portland or everywhere in the country, doing 2,000-4,000 people, 5,000 people, 15,000 people.
Yeah.
And that basically happened almost under your watch.
Well, you know, I can't take credit, obviously, but there was a huge kind of supporting cast there, that kind of a lot of unsung heroes. But I think it was kind of like a very much for me, like right place, right time. it was a real kind of team effort, and like everyone there kind of bonded in what we were doing together, and traveling together, bussing around, which was a lot different than WWE main.
Because everyone's together on a bus, a tour bus.
Everyone's together. Yeah. It's similar to like these international tours every weekend, and then you get back to Orlando and you're straight into the performance center again to do some training. What the hell? I just wrestled in Barclays, 16,000 people sold out, and it's Tuesday morning, and I gotta
do your rolls.
But it's all paid off in the long run.
Did they still make you do all that stuff even at the level that you are such a great performer, and you would still have to go do your Tuesday morning, hit the ropes and all that stuff?
At the beginning, yes. I was. When I signed, myself, Kevin Owens, and Hideo Itami, previously Kenta, all began in the beginner's class.
And basically three top names in your respective companies that you came from.
Yeah.
Right.
We kind of just enjoyed it, and took it as a welcome break. And I always kind of feel like I'm the most overtrained professional wrestler on the planet. Like, I've done 6 years in the UK, where I was getting coached, full time. I ended up in Japan, got completely retrained in the Japanese style for a good 4 years in the dojo before, I was out of the dojo system, and then, on a kind of superstar deal.
Mm-hmm.
And then, again, back to the bottom of the pile in NXT and got, retrained again. And honestly, before I came to NXT and now, I feel like 10 times the performer than when I arrived. And that's thanks to the training at the Performance Center.
Which is funny, because I'm sure when you first showed up, you probably thought, and I'm not saying this in an egotistical way, but you're probably thinking, okay, come on, how long am I going to be here? What am I going to be learning?
Yeah, exactly. And, people always say, you spent 2 years at NXT, 2 years at the Performance Center. It was way too long. But honestly, it was needed, and I needed to adjust to the style in WWE, and getting the knowledge from Terry Taylor every day, leadership from Matt Bloom, there's Sarah Del Rey there, Norman Smiley, there's just so many people there,
Brookside,
and everyone that was there kind of really helped mold me into more of, I don't want to say a finished product, because I don't consider myself that, but
more complete
and more well-rounded than I was when I arrived there.
You know, it's interesting, you mentioned Terry Taylor, who's down there now. He's one of the coaches, but
yeah.
I also learned a lot from Terry Taylor in WCW. He kind of really, he helped me out a lot. I wouldn't be where I am now without Terry Taylor and his influence and what he was able to do down there. What did Terry teach you? Because he's a very smart guy that I think was underrated, because he just has a big mouth. He'll tell you that himself. Yeah. He always got himself in so much trouble, but super smart guy to the business.
Yeah, super smart. Not just as a wrestling coach, but really as a life mentor, and kind of keep me on the right track, keep me focused. One thing, I was having a kind of a down day about 6 months in, and I was like, come on, man, I'm here 6 months. I want to get going, And he said, Finn, you've been here 6 months, and maybe if you spend a year here with me, you'll add 10 years onto your career. Mm-hmm. If you had a continued, performing the way you were performing in Japan, your shelf life was going to be greatly less than with the things I'm going to teach you. And really, he just teaches you about how to carry yourself better. Mm-hmm. And it's really stuff that I've, that's going to stay with me for my whole career.
I'll tell you one thing that he taught me, and this is actually something that I don't think I've ever talked about this before, but in WCW, about 98 or so, is when he turned me heel.
Yeah.
Because I was floundering as a babyface, nondescript. He turned me heel, gave me a couple little pointers, and he wanted me to use a submission.
Yeah.
Because for whatever reason, he said, we need to make you tougher, use a submission.
Yeah.
He wanted me to use an armbar. I suggested the Walls of Jericho that I still use. And he's the one that, at the time when we used the submission finish, he made the guy tap.
Yeah.
Make sure you hit the mat. Because before that, guys would just kind of go, okay. And then you'd wave your finger in the air and they'd ring the bell.
Because
UFC had started with the tap out.
Okay.
He's the first guy that brought tapping out to this country. And I will stick by that to this day.
Wow, yeah. I believe it. I really think he's kind of an underutilized person in this industry, mm-hmm. and he's someone that, like, has, you know, obviously I can't speak more highly of the knowledge that he's passed on to me, and you know, I'm very grateful for that.
What do you think it is about NXT that was able to take it from, like, we're mentioning small, you know, high school gymnasium shows to selling out the Barclays Center to becoming, like, the cool thing in wrestling in a lot of ways?
I don't know, man. It's it just felt like rock and roll wrestling, you know? It felt like, you know, it just felt, like, really cool. And, like, everyone was, like, they're all young guys, hungry, eager to impress. And I think for maybe the fans, they saw the talent as the underdogs. And, you know, everyone likes to root for the underdogs. And I think, you know, it was just a perfect storm of, you know, the brains behind the whole thing with the booking was great. You know, the production was, you know, off the charts. And then it was like young, hungry talent that, you know, wanted to perform.
Mm-hmm. A lot of guys that came from around the world, too,
yeah.
that, like you said, would start out in NXT as kind of a place to get your wings.
Yeah.
So when you come up here, because like, when I came here from WCW, I was not as good as I thought I was.
Yeah.
And like you said, you realize that after a year or two, like, holy smokes, I have to relearn everything in a lot of ways.
Yeah. And it's not even like relearning things. It's just kind of like tuning them in and kind of moving things around, like, you know, different... you know, different things you'd use at different points in a match. You kind of, like, shuffle it all around. It's just, it's been a whirlwind, man, the last 2 years.
Okay, here with Finn Balor. When did you start hearing rumors that you were going to get called up to the WWE main roster?
I heard rumors from the moment I signed the contract and it was announced. And it was kind of an ongoing thing. You know, when I signed, it was kind of under the pretense that, you know, maybe you'll spend, like, you know, 0 to 6 months in developmental, which it was developmental at the time. Like, you know, the NXT was kind of only in its infancy. And I think with the growth of NXT, it was, you know, something that was kind of not put on the back shelf, but, like, there was more important things to achieve at NXT than for me just, you know, to get called up for no reason whatsoever, you know. And there was days where I was kind of like cursing the system, going like, oh man, you know,
like, how much longer?
How much longer? But really, like, in hindsight and looking back, like, everything worked out exactly the way it was supposed to work out. And if it had happened any sooner, you know, it wouldn't have, I don't think it would have had the same impact. I don't think I would have had the same confidence.
That's a big thing, too, having confidence.
Yeah, you know, and being in NXT, having that confidence, but also getting the opportunity to work with the main roster on the overseas loops, and, you know, some loops in you know, in America, helped me build up, like, a relationship with the guys on the main roster, and, you know, we all kind of became familiar with yourself or with each other. So, like, you're not going into this locker room as, like, an unknown entity and, like, you know, with no friends or no allies. And that's another beautiful thing about NXT is that, like, I'm coming in now and, like, I'm traveling around with all my best buddies, you know?
Well,
like,
that's the thing. They all came to meet you here.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly, you know? So, you know, there's obviously the boys have came in, you know, the club from have came in from Japan. And then there's, you know, the friends that I made in NXT as well. Like, you know, Sami Zayn, Neville, you know, Kevin Owens. It's all there. So it's
really cool. So you got a close-knit group of guys that you came in through the system with, which is something like that's kind of with the guys that I came up with Dean and Eddie and Chris and Mysterio and those guys, because we had worked in so many different companies together. By the time we got to the big leagues, quote unquote, we'd already worked, you know, 20, 30, 40, 50 times in all places around the world. You have that bond.
Yeah, it's quite interesting because, like, me as a fan, I would have seen you guys coming in to WWE and thinking, man, that's so cool. All those guys have gone through it all together and now they're there.
Mm-hmm.
And the way it's worked out is it's been the exact same for me. So, like, I think there's something to be said about, like, you know, working your way up from, you know, from scratch and, you know, going through the grind. It makes you appreciate it so much more, and it gives it so much more value than, you know, if you just got it, like, handed to you willy-nilly. And, you know, that's...
What did you think when there was kind of that, you know, that raid of New Japan with Anderson and Gallows and AJ and Nakamura all at the same time?
I thought it's a great thing for wrestling. Mm-hmm. Obviously, you know, it'll hurt New Japan, you know, for the moment. But I believe, like, that the business has a great way of regenerating itself. And it's, you know, a lot of people would say to me when I was in NXT, you know, what's NXT going to be like without Finn Balor? You know, if you get called up, you know, we're done. And I just, my reply would be, well, if you look back 6 months ago, we had Kevin Owens, Baron Corbin, Apollo Crews, Sami Zayn, and they're all gone now. Mm-hmm. And we're fine. Mm-hmm. So NXT will be fine without me. New Japan will be fine without, you know, Gallows and Anderson and Nakamura. And, you know, when I'm gone from WWE, WWE is going to be fine too.
Yeah, that's how it goes. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. There's never one guy that I remember, like, how maybe, you know, a Brett left WWE or Hogan leaves WWE or Ed, it's like, doesn't matter anymore. Like you said, the business goes on.
Yeah.
From the brand of it.
And just know, like, even just looking at the Cruiserweight Classic, that's, you know, that I believe is really going to feed NXT. It's kind of, it's new generation of guys. And
there's some good guys in there that I'd never even heard of before.
Some incredible guys.
They did a great job of kind of scouring the globe to find.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
That's one thing. Like, I mean, Vince is obviously our boss, and Vince is still one of the smartest guys. Or to rephrase that, the smartest guy I've ever. Well, maybe Pat might be smarter, but the two of them are up there. But, I mean, Triple H has done a tremendous job of revamping the whole system. And also now, what's old is new, bringing in all these, like, quote-unquote, small guys.
Yeah.
That's exciting.
Yeah.
And we've got that back in our show, which we had 15 years ago, and then it went away for a while. But it's he's been really smart with that. I'm really giving props for it.
Yeah, it's funny you talk about, like, you know, smaller guys. For the longest time, I was told I was too small.
Yeah,
you know?
And, me too.
And
you're taller than I am. When you walked in, I was like, holy shit, he's a couple of inches taller than me. Yeah.
I think I'm the tallest short guy. I just wear shooter shoes, you know? So, like,
that's right, that's
like,
what it is.
Super flat, you know? So, but yeah, I was at the Performance Center. They were shooting the CWC. They had some of the boys in doing some training beforehand. And, you know, some close friends of mine from the UK, Noam Dar and Zack Sabre are there. And we're just kind of like giggling, like little schoolboys, kind of going like, hey, like, was the security not looking? And we all just kind of snuck in the back door. So that's what it felt like, you know, as if, like, how the hell did we all end up here at the same time? You know,
it's
like only like a year or 2 years ago, like, you know, we were doing an indie in a bar in the UK somewhere, you know?
And only a few years before that, there was the verdict that only new signings, guys who had to be 6'2" and 250 pounds, maybe last 6, 7, 8 years.
Yeah.
And you're thinking, oh my gosh, you're just missing out on all these great guys. And then it went away, and here you all here.
Yeah.
You know, there's a guy that I saw, I mean, just seeing the Cruiserweight Classic, because there's so many names and faces, but the one guy that I loved, he had this cool mustache, Jack Gallagher. Do you know him?
Yeah, I've met him in passing a couple times. He's a tremendous talent.
Is he good?
He
just like his look, you know?
Yeah, he's a great look. He's very quirky.
Yeah.
But, you know, technically he's extremely sound.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and, you know, I think he's got a bright future.
Yeah, like I said, I'm a big, you know, I love the presentation, the show business. And that's why I was attracted to you right away, because of the gimmick, the demon gimmick. It's like, this guy looks cool. Like, I like that, you know?
Yeah.
But let's talk about when you actually did get called up. Because last year, we worked in Japan, you and I. We had a great match. I came back and I told Vince, it's like, dude, this guy, Balor, great gimmick, great worker. You know, he said, oh, yeah, I got my eye on him. Year passes. Same thing. I actually went and had a meeting with Vince in Greenville, North Carolina. And I was pitching him an idea for SummerSlam where it would be you and I working. And I said, you got this guy, Balor. He's in NXT. He's been there for a couple of years. It's time to bring him up, man. And, like, he's ready. Like, he's good and this and that. And Vince was like, yeah, you know, we gotta get him going. So the plan for the last 4 or 5 months, 3 months, whatever it was you and I working at SummerSlam. Then you get called up, and I show up at Raw, and things changed, and we'll talk about that. But how was it for you when you got drafted? Did you know you were going to get drafted?
I'd heard whispers, but, like, you know, I don't really believe anything until it happens.
Yeah,
you know, like, if someone says it's raining outside, I'm going to, like, look out the window.
So, wait to get wet.
Yeah. So, you know, I'd heard whispers. I wasn't, like, sure it was actually going to happen or not. And, you know, when it happened, it was
a surprise? Like, were you watching on TV or something? Or
No, so we had a group kind of assembly at the Performance Center, and we all watched it on a big screen, and it was a weird moment, because, like, you're sitting there with all your colleagues at NXT, and, like, your name's called out, and, like, everyone's cheering for you, you know, and I'm just going, oh, man.
And you were called early, like, number three, right?
Yeah.
Number three overall, yeah.
I'm not sure the numbers, but, like, it was a very awkward moment. I'm quite introverted in nature, and, like, I don't like to be the center of attention
If you're like, not in the ring.
If I'm not in the ring, you know, especially. And all of a sudden, like, we're just sitting there, and my name's called, and everyone's around me clapping and cheering, and I just kind of started going, like, you know, blushing and stuff. And, you know, I can see, like, you know, it was a surreal moment, you know.
Have you had your last NXT show?
Yes. Well, I had, like, what felt like 100 last NXT shows because, you know, when Joe won the belt in Worcester, Massachusetts on the house show, pretty much every match after that, people were saying, you know, this is your last one, this is it, this is your last one. And then I was told maybe the weekend before the draft, there was TakeOver in the cage with Joe, that could be your last one. Then I think the next night or the next week I'd done the TV match with Nakamura, and I was told, you know, that's your last one, you're done. And then they were like, oh, well, we need you on the house shows this weekend. So I was like, okay, yeah, no problem. So then there was like 3 or 4 weeks of this is your last one. Then I was told, this is it, this is your last one, go out and have fun. Went out, had fun. The draft happened. Literally 5 minutes after the draft happened, Matt Bloom, who's the head coach at the Performance Center, comes over and he goes, hey kid, don't forget, I need you this weekend. I was like, oh,
classic. He had more retirement tours than Terry Funk at this point. So where was the actual last show?
The last one was in Texas.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, we done the Texas loop around there. I think we finished up in Houston, and then from Houston I came straight.
Was there like did you have like a little backstage moment?
We actually had an in-ring moment, which was quite surreal because normally I finish out the show with like a little, you know, thank you promo or whatever, and as I grab the mic and I'm about to start talking, Bailey's music hits, and Bailey comes out. And, you know, we've had kind of like an on-screen romance for a while, you know, but that's it. It's just an on-screen okay. kind of thing. And she came out and she gave a little speech. And then, you know, everyone else who'd been drafted came out to the ring. And, you know, we all kind of acknowledged each other. And then the whole locker room emptied into the into the entranceway. And, you know, it was just nice to kind of share that farewell with all the
people. Bailey's another one who's ready to come up.
Absolutely. Yeah, ready. And, like, I think she can really kind of reach such a huge audience, and like she's such a good role model for, you know, younger kids and, you know, girls in general, and I think she's got a huge future ahead.
Yeah, so we've never really had that before, like somebody for, like, you know, preteen girls sort of thing to really latch on to.
Yeah.
You know?
And, you know, an incredible performer as well at the same.
Good timing. So, yeah. So tell me about your 35th birthday.
Oh, man.
What a day.
So I get a text message from Hunter at about like 11 in the morning saying, happy birthday, big day today. I was like, oh, I'm going to be at Raw. Like, I have no idea what I'm doing, but I'm going to be at Raw. And I've been at Raw countless amounts of times and like didn't know what was going to happen. Nothing ever happened. So I wasn't like really under any kind of impression that anything was going to happen today. So get to the building, you know, everyone's in the production meeting or whatever.
Didn't you say too that you had brought a suit because you thought, because I had told you that maybe we're doing something.
Yeah, so like I'd brought everything. I'd brought like, you know, leather jacket gear, suit gear, but like a suit that if I need physicality, I don't mind if it gets ripped up. So like I'm wearing a suit, but I've got an extra suit if we need to like have
You're thinking in case we were doing a promo or something,
yeah,
right?
Yeah. And I was under the impression that it was going to be, you know, if anything, it was going to be me and you.
So was I.
Yeah, and, you know, about 5 p.m., you know, I get pulled aside and I'm told, you know, you're in a four-way to open the show, and it's, you know, it is what it is, so.
And you're going over.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, and I was like,
phew. Did they tell you the whole plan? Because you were in the first match.
No.
Oh, they didn't even tell you that?
Yeah, it was one step at a time.
Okay.
It was one step at a time. So I was like, that's what we're going to do. I was like, holy cow, man, this is my birthday. I'm getting to debut against, you know, three guys that I really respect. You know,
Rusev, Cesaro,
and Kevin Owens, who, you know, is of, you know, good history with too. So went in there and it was all kind of, you know, last second stuff because I had to rehearse the entrance, which, you know, wasn't, you know, for the camera angles and everything like that. So it was all kind of very thrown together at the last minute, and kind of got kicked out the curtain, went out there, and So, I'm on Raw, I guess.
But did you? But then, so when did you find out that you were going to be winning the second match against Roman?
Yeah, after this.
After the first one?
Yeah, after the first one, yeah. Because, you know, I hadn't had a chance to speak to Roman until...
So you didn't know until after the first match was done that you were going to be winning the second one?
Yeah.
You're kidding me.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay, so I don't want to jump ahead. So what was it finally like to go out and be on Raw?
Oh, man. So I guess they had that presentation at the beginning where they had the whole roster on the stage.
Mm-hmm.
And they called out the 8 participants in the... you know, the 2 4-way matches. And I guess the idea was for this first 7 guys to be called, and then on the last entrant is NXT's Finn Balor. And, you know, the seats open and I walk out through the middle. And like, I just remember like walking out there and going, oh, am I standing in the middle? Because I think I was a little bit off center, you
make
know.
Sure you're in the middle.
And then like Rusev shouting at me, I'm like, am I supposed to interact with Rusev? And I was like, how's my collar look?
You go right back to being a total green boy, right?
Yeah. But the reaction of the crowd, really kind of put a lot of nerves at ease that night, you know. So
were you worried at first that no one would know who you were?
I'm never worried about that because, you know, obviously I have a lot of self-belief and self-confidence, but it definitely is reassuring to get like a little pat on the back and say, yeah, we got you, dude.
Yeah. That's the thing, like the NXT fans, they're very vocal and loud.
Yeah.
Even the first night when Enzo and Cass came out, maybe 10% of the audience knew who they were,
yeah.
But they reacted so huge that it makes everyone else want to react as well. Like, well, how come we're not in on this?
Yeah.
We should cheer as well.
Yeah.
So instantly they were over.
Yeah.
It's kind of what happened with you as well.
Yeah.
So you finally come out on Raw, you do the match.
Yeah.
Tell us what happens after that.
Do the match, come backstage. I'm like, holy cow, man. Like, what's next? I get pulled away. We do a couple of interviews for .com, a couple of pictures for social media. And, I just go back to catering. I'm like, oh, I wonder what happens next. So I'm in the last match, you know. But hang around the catering for a while. Get pulled into the room with, you know, a couple of the agents and Roman. And they go over what we're going to do. And I'm like, just looking around like, is this really happening today? it's all kind of very foggy. I remember being in Gorilla, not entirely sure of what I'm going to do when I go out there. And wasn't sure, like, because the entrance is something that's very particular. And
your entrance?
Yeah, my entrance. And I'm not sure whether I should do it twice in the same night or not. So, like, I'm kind of walking out there going, am I going to give it the
full pose and everything?
The full pose and all the mannerisms and, you know, really take my time on it. And I kind of just went through the motions, but kind of gave a watered-down version because, really, what I thought I was portraying on television was literally what I was feeling. I was, like, anxious, nervous, like, oh, my God, is this really happening? Don't mess this up. You've worked for 16 years to get here, you know?
Right.
So, went through the match, worked with Roman. Absolutely incredible in the ring.
He's great, isn't he?
It's unbelievable to hear the amount of negativity he gets. And when you get in the ring with him, he is absolutely one of, like, it was an eye-opening moment for me, you know, going like, oh my God, this guy's really, really good. And 16 years of, like, you know, being in there with them all, and then, like, getting in there with Roman, who has, among, like, the fans and, like, some of, you know, wrestlers around the world who obviously haven't, like, locked up with him, has kind of, like, a bad reputation, or, you know, you can't wrestle, you can't wrestle. And, like, when we locked up, I was like, oh my God, this guy is great. And, was never, like, at any point in that match kind of uncomfortable or, like, you know, I was just, you know, he just put me a lot at ease with the whole situation. And you know, hats off to Roman. It was he really kind of led me through it, you know.
Isn't it funny though, like, when you hear it, and obviously you've been around a long time, you understand people's opinions and stuff, but when you don't know for sure, you don't believe it, but you're kind of like, well, you know, I'll see if this guy's any good, or we'll see how good he is. And the same thing happened with Cena. Actually, Nakamura said the same thing. He thought that Cena was just a typical American wrestler until he actually saw him up close and saw just how good he is.
Yeah.
Because people, like you said, Roman, and this is the same thing. Give him about another year or so and people will start, you know, buzzing for him. Because he's so good. He never has a bad match.
Never.
Works hard, great performer, good instinct, third generation, timing.
Yeah.
You know, it's just there.
Yeah. So. No, he's got it all. And, the match was what it was. 1, 2, 3. For a split second, I almost started crying.
Hmm.
Yeah, and like I'm not really like an emotional like person, like outwardly, you know.
Yeah.
And I think like I maybe cried for about 2 seconds when I won the NXT title in Tokyo against Kevin Owens, and I'd say I cried for about 1 second on Raw, like when the 1, 2, 3, like when I kind of went like yeah. Like, and I looked up and I could see like the Raw signs around, and I was like, holy cow, man, you beat Roman Reigns on your first night on Raw. And like I could kind of feel myself kind of welling up a little bit and said, no, I cool, you know, you're cool. And but I remember going back through the curtain and like, you know, everyone was there at Gorilla, and I was like, I literally said to Stephanie, is this what Monday Night Raw is like every week, and I get to do this every week because this is amazing.
Did you speak to Vince at all before or after the match?
I spoke to him briefly before and briefly afterwards. So, you know, he said, you know, good job. You know, there's some things we need to work on, but, you know, plenty of time to do it, yeah.
See, I love that fact because, like I said, not to make this about me, but we were very close in this situation because, like, I was like, you know, bring him up. Let me work with him. Let's do this.
Yeah.
And then I get to Sunday night was a pay-per-view.
Yeah.
And I had an idea of something with me and Owens. And Vince is like, well, you're going to be doing something with Owens quicker than you think, but I'll talk to you about that tomorrow. And I'm like, okay. So whenever he does that, I start thinking, well, what's going on? What am I going to do? Is this going to be good? Is it going to be bad? Is it going to be weird or whatever? So I go see the next day. I get to TV and I found out you're in a 4-way match.
Yep.
I'm like, okay. So, and I see Finn in the other one. I'm like, oh, it's obvious. It's going to happen. You know, I'm going to win mine. He's going to win his. And we're going to have a confrontation.
Yeah.
Vince wants Roman over on you. And I'm like, oh, so I'm not winning. And Finn is in the other one. He's probably winning. So I guess our thing is probably off at SummerSlam. So I go in and see Vince because now I'm like, I like to know what's going on. So I go see him and he's like, come in my room. And he's like, yeah, we really want to give Balor a shove and really make this, it was the first live Raw, make it something impactful and switch everything up and, you know, change everything around. And, you know, this is the way we're going. And I was like, you know, at that point, I was just happy that you were there. And it's like, what a great thing. Because everyone, you know, Reigns is going to win, and then you come in and win, shut everybody up, and create a new star in one night. It's genius.
Yeah. I just kind of got goosebumps there as you were saying it, but
So here you are, your first pay-per-view is a championship match at SummerSlam.
Yeah.
Once again, one of the biggest shows. You're in the championship match against Seth Rollins.
Yeah.
Have you ever worked with him before?
We locked up for the first time 2 nights ago.
In Melbourne.
In Melbourne in a tag team match.
Yeah.
It was you and Seth against myself and Roman.
Yeah.
And, you know, Seth is someone that I've kind of looked up to for a long time on WWE TV. And there's always kind of, I feel, been a certain amount of who's better kind of not heat but kind of edge between both of us, healthy rivalry. And you know, it's interesting because we touched on it. We done an NXT panel in Brooklyn the morning of last takeover, which will be, you know, a year and a day
to SummerSlam.
And it was something that he touched on about, you know, people would always talk about, oh, you know, Seth's better, oh, no, Finn's better, this and that. And, you know, he was like, no, I'm the man. And, like, I'm very kind of, like, you know, standoffish and that kind of thing. I don't think anyone's better than anyone. Everyone's just different, you know, different flavors. And it's very funny to me that it's come down to, like, a year later. Haven't had this conversation at the NXT panel that now we're having this title match at SummerSlam,
which I'm assuming probably the main event. It'll probably go on last.
I have no idea.
I'm not saying that I'm just saying in my opinion it probably will. If you think about the match, I know, I mean, Orton and Lesnar, and there's the other SmackDown thing. But to me, I think it seems you're going to be the last match at SummerSlam. You know?
Yeah. the way you just said about, like, you like to know everything, I like to know nothing. And that's something that I've kind of, you know, I don't know, I just feel like there's less things to worry about if I know everything.
That's true.
You know, and
because you know everything changes a million times.
Yeah,
anyway,
it all changes, right? And you get one idea stuck in your head, and then it's hard to kind of let go of that idea.
Yeah,
you know,
that's a great point.
Yeah, so you know, until I'm very much need to know basis kind of.
But and that's what I love about this, though, is that you're coming into this with a really good attitude from being in the business for so long. You have that experience of knowing, like you said, until it happens. It's not happening, yeah. Or it hasn't happened yet,
yeah.
You know. But I love when the company does this, even doing it with Ziggler and Ambrose. It's like somebody new, which yeah. is what the business is all about. And plus, what a way for you to debut. I mean, this is like, you're going to be stoked, and you're going to be even more into it than you would because it's a title match
yeah.
against Rollins.
Yeah.
You know?
Again, I guess I should be. But for me, it's just another match.
Mm.
And it's in the same building that I had the match with Kevin against
right.
last year. So it'll be the same amount of people, the same locker room, you know, the same amount of production.
Same horrible in and out at the Barclays Center. It's so hard to get in that damn place. Yeah.
And perhaps, you know, the same agonizing paint job and scrub up job afterwards.
Well, let's talk about that. I know we spoke about this last time around, but that seemed like it was a lifetime ago.
Yeah.
People got to see it on Raw this week, the emergence of the demon character, which we both know it, NXT fans know it, but I love the fact that the WWE Universe, for the most part, basically had no idea what you were talking about until they got to see it.
Yeah.
And then experienced like this super cool, one of my favorite gimmicks that I've seen over the last, you know, 10, 15 years.
Oh, thank you.
So give me a little background on where you got the idea for this and then what it entails to put it on and do it.
Yeah, I think we touched on it before, was that I'd turned heel in Japan
mm-hmm.
and, you know, I'd kind of changed my wrestling style from being kind of high-flying, high-impact to cheating and, you know, doing, you know, win by any means necessary. But I still felt like people had an attachment to, like, my physical appearance.
Mm-hmm.
And so I had a couple of options. One was to put on a ton of weight, which I didn't personally want to do. Yeah. Like, you know,
I'm a fat, so.
Yeah. The other was wear a bodysuit, like Liger.
Mm-hmm.
And the third idea was to paint myself head to toe in black and look like a shadow, like just moving around the ring. So, like, people were like, is it a human? Is it not? And that was basically where the idea stemmed from, and it kind of grew over time into a demon character.
Right, right. Yeah. Which, to me, is just... it's almost like Venom from Spider-Man, right? Yeah. Was there some influence of that?
Yes, yeah, that yeah. There was a lot of influences. You know, I was almost went to art college when I left school. You know, I'd applied, got accepted, and then just didn't go. And you know, so I've always kind of been heavily into art. I love kind of the animation, especially in comic books, and kind of the body language portrayed by the heroes and villains. So like that's something that kind of influenced it a lot. But really, the main idea was just I wanted to look like a shadow. And it wasn't originally the idea of I want to be like Venom. Mm-hmm. It was I wanted to look like a shadow. And it's a guy in the ring wrestling against his own shadow.
Did you, were the first couple of times, were you a shadow?
I never got to do fully
black.
Fully yeah. black. What happened was the girl that I hired to apply the paint the first time came, and the idea was, excuse me ma'am, can you paint me entirely black? And she says, absolutely I can, but I can also do this. And she has a portfolio, and she starts flicking through the portfolio, and I go, oh my god,
yes.
Yeah,
and that's the cool thing about working with artists.
Yeah, yeah. You know? And like, you know, I got to work with a couple different artists, you know, one in Japan, one in the UK. I've worked with a few here in the UK, in America now, and you know, getting to kind of collaborate with those and kind of ping pong ideas back and forward is really something that kind of gets my creative juices flowing, you know.
Because I remember in Japan, you didn't wear the paint when we worked, but the next night you did against Owens.
Yeah.
And you had to get there 3 hours before the show, 4 hours before the show.
Yeah, I normally allow myself 4 hours for the entire paint job. But
that's insane.
Yeah. Just depends on different factors with like getting pulled away and stuff like that, and you know if something gets messed up and I don't like it, I'm like cleaning it off and start again.
Mm-hmm.
But normally it's maybe 3.5, but I'll allow 4 hours, and then maybe I want it done an hour before the match starts, you know, so I get time to prepare and warm
up mentally and everything.
So it is, it's a process, it's a long day.
Have you found somebody in the States? Like, do you have to fly somebody in, or is there
I have a couple different people that that can come in from different places, and depending on what type of paint we're going to use or what, you know, the style requires.
So you're flying them in?
Yeah.
Although I'm assuming now probably you don't have to worry about that expense anymore.
I hope not.
It's funny when I was talking to Vince about that day, that Monday on your birthday, we were talking about the paint, and he's like, is that stuff toxic? And I said, well, I don't think so, because it was toxic. It'd probably kill him. He's like, how long does it take to put on? I said, well, it takes about 3 hours or 4 hours. It's not like a decal, like a decal, like a, what's the guy? Is it Hakushi? Remember that he had
Remember
he had the tattoos?
I always asked, how did he do that? Do you know?
It was with, I don't know how to pronounce it. In Canada, we call them decals. I think they're called decals, like stickers that you put a strip on and then like use water to, like a kid's tattoo.
Got it, yeah.
That sort of thing. Yeah. So he would just have strips of them and do it.
I got to look into some of those, maybe.
Well, if you could. I think Matt had them, but Matt Bloom, when he was Tensai, I think
that's
he
right,
wore them as well, right?
Yeah.
But so you have to bring somebody in, and then they're putting the paint on. So this is not something you're going to do on a, you know, Sunday afternoon in Peoria at a house show.
I certainly hope not.
Was that something in the back of your mind? Were you thinking, like, I hope Vince doesn't want me to do this every time?
It wasn't something that I ever put too much kind of thought or concern into. I always thought, like, it would work itself out in the long run. Like, it's crazy because when I signed with, you know, WWE, a lot of people would say, you know, you're crazy. You're not going to be allowed to do your paint. You're not going to be allowed to do this. You're not going to be allowed to do that. And here I am now, like, wrestling with the idea of, am I going to do it every day or not?
See, to me, that blows my mind that people would say that, because to me, your gimmick is tailor-made for the WWE. It's exactly what we do here.
Yeah.
And we haven't had a gimmick like this since Kane and The Undertaker, like a really cool, supernatural, creepy... People love that shit.
Yeah.
You know, it's perfect for here.
Yeah. When I came in, I was under the idea that it was gone forever.
Really?
Yeah. And I remember being at the Performance Center about a month, maybe 6 weeks, and Hunter pulled me aside, and he just kind of folded his arms, kind of tilted his head to the side, and said, so tell me about this paint that you do. And just, you know, explained it. And then, you know, I had a conversation with himself and William Regal. And they just basically pointed out, like, listen, this is a cool idea.
Mm-hmm.
We like it. We just have to find out a reason why you do it. You can't just, like, turn up some days painted. Mm-hmm. And, like, it's not explained, you know. So we need a backstory. So that's basically it. Like, WWE really, I don't want to say created the gimmick, but ironed out the kinks and like made it something that it wasn't. It was just me turning up in a bunch of paint of, you know, whatever I wanted that weekend.
So what was the backstory that you came up with?
Basically the idea is, you know, everyone has their demons, and some people are able to kind of, you know, control them a lot better than others. And when I need to kind of tap into my inner demon, that's when I
to really like
channel that aggression, that anger, you know, that focus.
A big match situation, right? Yeah. You know, it's interesting that you said that, because Y2J was an idea I had to call my finisher.
Uh-huh.
And then when I told that to Vince, he was like, no, Y2J isn't the name of your finishing move. Y2J is you. And I was like, really? And, like, what a genius thing.
Yeah.
Like you said, I've got this idea of the paint. Really, but why do you have it?
Yeah.
And, like, just, I love the little nuances of what the WWE and, you know, Hunter,
the why, not the hell.
The why, exactly. And just taking these little things, like, okay, this is what I am, and moving it just a little bit to the left, and you're like, wow, it's so much better. I never would have thought of that. At the airport today, we were waiting, and there was a little kid there wearing a full length demon costume.
Yeah.
Is that something that they were selling, or did he make that himself?
He made that himself.
I said to Roman, to Reigns, I said, get ready to sell about 1 million of those things for Halloween. And, you know, that's...
Yeah.
Like,
last Halloween, I think it was christened Ballerween, and there was so many people, you know, with face paint and, you know, body suits and, you know, demon costumes, that, you know, I'm a huge fan of this. I'm a huge supporter of this. So anyone who goes to the trouble of, like, painting their face, sending me a picture of it, I'm retweeting it straight away. And I think it got to the point where there was like 600 retweets by me that day, which is like rare. I barely tweet at all anymore, you know. And like, you know, I got a lot of heat with the boys in NXT. They're like, going, dude, stop
blowing up my time. Well, then unfollow me, dude.
I know. But like a lot of the boys said, yeah, man, I had to unfollow you for a week because you were just retweeting too much stuff.
People that follow Finn on Twitter around Balorween, you might want to follow him for a bit if it bugs you.
Because, like I said,
if there was 600 last year, not that you don't realize, but you don't realize how big this is going to be and how much bigger the universe is now.
I have no idea.
I'm telling you right now, it's going to go through the roof. You know, I'm seeing kids, I'm seeing like masks, I'm seeing the headpiece that you have. I can just see Vince sitting in his vault of money, just rubbing his hands and cackling, ha 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 ha. But I mean, that's the thing that, like, it's like you said, taking this idea of this image and this gimmick and putting it out to the mainstream. It's tailor made for this. You know,
I hope so.
Well, I think so. I think for sure.
It's quite interesting, you know. And I always have this conversation with Carl Anderson, and you know, Sami Zayn as well. And, you know, he's, you know, as you're aware, you know, he's quite a deep thinker. And you know, he'll always say, like, man, isn't it so crazy that you spent like 14 years like honing your profession, trying to be like the most, you know, detailed technical wrestler you could possibly be, all of a sudden you paint your face and, you know, everything just mushrooms, you know, at light speed. So I don't know, is it one of those cases of which came first, you know, you know, and would I have been able to do the paint without, you know, the backstory? But it's definitely food for thought.
I remember Mick said once, he's like, you know, I spent all these years taking thumbtack bumps and, you know, exploding barbed wire matches, and the most I ever was with a sock in my hand. You know, because once again, you know, I know that hardcore fans will say one thing, but this is the brilliance of the WWE, is taking that technical wrestling out of just two guys half naked in their underwear exchanging amazing holds and moves into mainstream entertainment.
I wonder, would Mick have been over with a sock in his hand if he had not had the career that he had before that, if that makes sense? Because nobody else would have got that sock over, only him. So,
plus with the people having the respect of him falling through the cell and all the stuff he did. You know, I think you're right. Like you said, I think the foundation comes first and then the accolades come after. But once again, you're coming in the WWE. A lot of people have never seen you before. You're coming in with this gimmick. It's a modern, you know, Undertaker type vibe.
Yeah, it's crazy, man.
It is, man. It's super crazy. What do you think? Did you work with AJ in Japan at all?
Never, man. Me and AJ, my last day in New Japan, I had my last like blow off match with Taguchi, my longtime tag team partner turned like nemesis, who we built to this match for a year. I had my last match, lost to Taguchi. One match later, AJ done a run in and debuted. So we literally like were never on screen at the same time.
Yeah, because he kind of took over the Bullet Club when you left.
So we've had the kind of our whole kind of career, we've kind of like missed each other everywhere. Bar like, I think we had one match in New Japan where it was like maybe a 6-man or an 8-man tag, where we were maybe in the ring together for like 2 minutes tops. But yeah, we've had very little interaction. And now again, like, I was in NXT, he was in, you know, Raw and SmackDown, then the brands get, you know, divided, and he's now on SmackDown, I'm on Raw, so we kind of miss each other again. So I'm hoping eventually, you know, the, you know, we'll come together, and, you know.
But it's exciting too, though. Like, one of the things I'm enjoying about this run that I have right now is that there's so many great new guys to work with. And nothing, you know, like, I love working the guys that I work with, but you work them 5, 10, 20, 30, 40, 100 times. Now it's like, okay, there's Owens and there's Zayn and there's Cesaro and there's Ambrose and there's, you know, AJ. And it's like a whole Roman and now you. It's so much fun because it's like you discover this whole new world, this whole fresh cast of guys who can all work and have the great attitude. And to me, it gives me this buzz that I just want to keep going, like, yeah, you know, yeah, never bored.
Of, it's like, you know, kid with a new set toy. Of toys, yeah.
So you must feel that way, too, because in NXT, obviously, the roster is a good roster, but you're working the same guys, I imagine, quite often.
Yeah, listen, I can't explain how much Samoa Joe has kind of influenced me over the last 6 months of getting that run with him and, like, how much I've learned from, like, working against him.
Mm-hmm.
Then, obviously, coming in, getting to work with you, like, mm-hmm. you know, not blowing smoke, but, you know, like, the last couple of nights we've been able to work with each other and kind of, like, seeing things from a different perspective.
Mm-hmm.
And just kind of that constantly changing horizon of, like, getting to work with new people and kind of, like, see things from different points of view, like, testing yourself against, mm-hmm. like, different, you know, body types, shapes, styles. It's
yeah, adapting to everybody's nuances.
Yeah, you know, and, like, Joe really taught me how to fight. You know, because I had to fight him.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, that's something that's going to, like... that really helped me in the match with Roman because I had worked with Joe so much that I'd learned to kind of have this kind of almost like slugfest style but as a smaller guy. And, you know, I applied some of the lessons that I learned off Joe in the match with Roman on Raw and that kind of really helped me, like, slip right in there where I would have, like... Had I not have had that series with Joe, I wouldn't have adapted to the Roman match so seamlessly, you know.
Right.
So I think all those kind of lessons and, you know, now getting to work with you.
Because it's just minor things. Like when we worked, there was maybe one little thing here, one little thing there. Same thing when I work with people. It's just one little thing that you learn, but you can take that and run with it.
Yeah, you know, and if you work with like 100 people and learn one little thing from them, you know. It's,
yeah, that's what I love. Yeah. Who are you looking forward to working with here?
I'm really excited to work with Seth.
Mm-hmm.
That's a big one. John Cena.
Mm.
Yeah, like, you know, he's been there 15 years at
the top, yep.
And, you know, that's where I want to be. So I'm not going to make any bones about it, you know.
He's another guy, though, like you said, he's like, you don't realize how good he is until you get in the ring with him.
Yeah.
And a lot of people don't realize, John calls most of his matches in the ring.
Yeah.
Which is really a lost art.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, he'll have some stuff figured out, but most, the finish is done, but most of it, other than that, is just on his feel.
Yeah.
Which is a very rare thing,
uh-huh.
you know, which is cool, which I like. So
I've had a chance to watch him and AJ tear it up the last couple mm-hmm. of nights, and just like watching through the curtain and at the monitor, you know, at Gorilla, it's you know, just getting to see it in the environment and listen to the crowd like through the curtain is how he does it. You know,
mm-hmm.
it's a skill that not many have.
I'm excited to talk to you maybe a month from now just to see, like, AJ when he came in here was talking about how he worked on national TV for 10 years with TNA,
yeah.
You know, good fan base, but it's not, nothing compares to when you come here.
Yeah.
You've only been on the show for 2-3 weeks now. Have you noticed the amount of people that recognize you has gone up?
Way up.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's insane. Are the amount of people like that now, like, in Japan, I could go to Japan, like, wrestle my heart out for 40 minutes on pay-per-view, and I wouldn't get one message on my phone after the match. And, like, I'll go out on Raw and, like, talk, you know? And, I'll come back, and there's, like, 70 messages. There's, like, you know, 50 WhatsApps. There's, like, 20 DMs. I'm like, what? The reach that, you know, WWE has is mind-blowing to me. But I think the thing that kind of helps me keep it in perspective is that it's just the same thing that I've been doing all along.
Sure.
You know, and now just more people
just at a bigger level.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, because that's exactly what it is, where I think even AJ said this, when you go through an airport or you know, sit down next to somebody, what do you do? I'm a wrestler. Are you in the WWE? Well, no, I'm in this other company. And it's almost like you're not, okay, you must not be any good.
Yeah.
You know, and now you can finally say, I wrestle in the WWE.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, normally I just say I'm in between jobs right now.
Yeah, exactly. Self-employed.
Yeah.
Self-employed. You never want to get it, because everyone always has to go, wrestling, huh?
Yeah.
I used to watch wrestling when I do you know Baron Miguel Sacluna, Billy Superstar Billy Graham. Oh, he was my favorite. Like, oh my gosh, if I sat next to a musician, I wouldn't go, you know, my favorite band. I love the Beatles. Have you ever play a song with the Beatles? You know, that's what you always get, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I like to say it. I work for a wrestling company.
Oh, okay.
Right. And then they say, oh, what do you do? And I said, oh, I count the lights.
good, right? Yeah. But speaking of finally having that mainstream recognition, how I know your family is very always been supportive. They must be just freaking out now that you're actually...
Oh, man. Like, yeah. Talking about, like, the draft, I had to do an interview that I put on pause so I could FaceTime my mum and dad, who are awake back home in Ireland at like 3 a.m. Decked out in Baller Club gear, like shouting, like, you know, like Ireland had qualified for the World Cup. And then got straight back into the locker room after Monday Night Raw had beaten Roman. And, you know, it was about a half an hour after that, again, I got to the locker room, and it must be like 5 a.m. in Ireland. And, like, I call home, and they're, like, you know, up dancing around the sitting room, like, you know, like we'd won the World Cup. So, yeah, they've been incredible supporters, like, the whole way through this. And they'll be at SummerSlam as well.
That's
so
great.
Yeah, they were upset they weren't able to be at the debut. But as I said, like, I didn't even know it was going to happen. So, you know, there was no way they were going to be there.
When I won the Undisputed Championship, like, my wife wasn't there, my dad wasn't there, because I didn't know.
Yeah.
Same as you, I'd heard rumors. But yeah, until that day,
yeah,
I had no idea.
Yeah.
So you always see people win the title, and they've got their whole family's there. I didn't even know. I was like, I'm not inviting anybody because it's probably not going to happen anyways.
Yeah.
You know. And yeah, then so it's like, why didn't you tell me? Dad, I didn't even know. You didn't know? No, I didn't know.
What do you mean? It's not planned out months in advance?
Yeah. No. Well, let me tell you something. Yeah, a couple last things. You mentioned the Balor Club. Mm-hmm. And that was something that was the trademark by the WWE as a merchandise thing. And everyone was expecting, oh, it's going to be the Bullet Club. And I love reading the things when, obviously, this week on Raw, you know, the Bullet Club's going to turn on AJ and Balor's going to show up and reunite.
Oh, yeah.
You know,
yeah,
everyone had their thing, you got to beat the Bullet Club. Yeah. You know, is that something you think could happen? Or do you think...
I think it could happen eventually, but I don't think it needs to happen right now.
I agree.
I don't think there's any
reason right now.
Yeah. Fantasy booking, yeah, you know, it's a great kind of idea, like, you know, with plenty of options. But I think for me right now, being my own entity is, like, more important for myself, and I think for Gallows and Anderson, you know, to establish themselves.
Yeah.
So I think down the line it's definitely a possibility, but for now I'm very...
It just made me laugh, though, because, like, Balor Club, which is a cool... It could be the name of a clothing company.
Yeah.
But because it was Balor Club, everyone just assumed, well, that's the new name for the Bullet Club, and they're all going to be together, and that's exactly what's going to happen, and it's going to start tonight.
Yeah.
It didn't happen tonight. I remember when I first came to the WWE, it was almost like a golden age for Canadian wrestling. Edge, Christian, Jericho, Benoit.
Yeah.
There was a lot of great
Storm.
Canadians. Lance Storm. I mean, Brett was kind of still around.
Yeah.
We're almost in I think this is the first time ever in WWE history where it's basically like a lot of Irish performers.
Yeah,
like
yeah,
three really good ones, and probably one of the best producers in Fit Finlay, all Irish.
Yeah.
Did you know all of them coming up through the system?
I knew Rebecca came and trained.
Becky Lynch.
With NWA Ireland. When I was part of NWA Ireland, she was one of the students there. And from the moment she walked in the door, everyone knew what she was going to do. And, you know, it was just a matter of time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she had her journey that kind of brought her different ways.
Right.
And finally back to wrestling. And, you know, she's been unbelievable. Like, you know, and even just every time I see her walk out on TV, like, she owns it every time.
Yeah.
And, none of the boys at the training center back in, like, whatever it was, 2002, were under any... like doubt that she was not gonna make it, you know.
Yeah.
And Sheamus I'd met maybe around 2003-2004 in a train station. We met up, we had a pint, had a chat about wrestling. He wrestled for the evil Irish whip wrestling, like, you know. So there's two Irish based promotions.
What was the other one called?
NWA Ireland.
Okay.
And Irish whip wrestling. I was with one, he was with the other, but we were kind of we're kind of almost like cheating on our girlfriends kind of deal, where, like, we're meeting up and
meeting
talking
in the middle of the night,
and discussing the business, and basically, like, had the same idea that there's more to wrestling than, like, this petty little feud between
you. Don't know
two
that when you're
companies.
Starting, right? You think I'll never talk to them.
Yeah,
I'll never work for NWA Ireland.
Yeah, there's like 3 million people in Ireland, probably maybe 150 people in the wrestling scene.
Yeah.
Let's split it in half.
Yeah, exactly.
You know?
Right,
that sounds like a great idea.
Yeah.
We were kind of both of the same idea that, you know, we need to get out of here. We need to kind of spread our wings if we want to pursue it. He came to WWE and started in developmental. I went to Japan, and now we're here together. And it's great kind of to help you it kind of takes me out of the moment every time. Kind of, I'll see him and we'll just have a little bit of like Irish banter or Irish crack, you know. And
it means something, doesn't it? Like, there's like me and Owens and Sammy, like the, you know, all Canadian guys.
Yeah,
there's, you know, you have a little kindredship. Yeah, you go in the corner and talk a little Canadian if you need to. You're a little yeah. bit, you know,
just like you'll hear an L Dublin saying that he'll say or something, you know. And I go, that's cool.
Yeah, you're proud of each other too because of it, right? Yeah. Last question: what was your favorite match that you had in NXT? If you had to pick one or two of them.
The technically wasn't NXT match, but it was the match against Kevin at the WWE special in Tokyo, winning the title there for so many reasons. Mm-hmm. Like, that was the building that I'd seen my first New Japan show at live. It was the building that I had my last New Japan match in, and then like a year later to return. Kind of like when I left, I was under the impression I was never going back there to Japan, or I'd maybe never get to see a lot of those friends again. And then like a year later to have that match against Kevin, who I became very close with, and, you know, surrounded by a lot of the friends that I'd left a year behind, it was kind of a very kind of full circle coming of age moment. So for so many reasons, that was one of them. The match against Joe in Worcester when I lost the title was probably my favorite one. And being able to lie on the mat and look up at Joe's hand being raised with the title, and the shock, like the split of like shock and joy of the house show crowd of like, what have we witnessed? And I think that was one of the most, it's probably the most satisfying moment that I had in NXT of like, we really kind of, we built to that for a long time and then completely surprised everyone. And it came out of the blue, and I thought that was probably the best booking move that a company has made in a long time. Yeah,
I think once again, when Joe comes up here, it's going to be another guy who's just like, we're, he's going to be an overnight sensation after 20 years working.
You know
what I mean?
Joe's like ready for a long time, but what he brings to NXT is something that no one can replace. And, you know, I said earlier on about, you know, the business like regenerates itself, and, you know, someone will step in. It's going to take some big shoes to fill in the role that Joe plays in the locker room. And that's way more valuable than what he plays on TV as a character. Is. Because he is a leader true and true. And, you know, he's always got time for everyone. You know, his advice is always pinpoint. He's been through it all. I call him kind of my Buddha, you know, where if I've ever got a problem or ever got an issue, I'll be like straight on the phone to Joe. He's one of the people that like I trust most in his business. And, you know, he's gonna come in here eventually, and he's going to shake things up.
Let me ask you one last question. I can see a Finn Balor Demon versus The Undertaker match.
Oh, man.
Has that ever crossed your mind? I know you always say, like, I never think about it, but in a fantasy world, like, that would be a killer presentation.
Yeah, you know what? So, like, before the last WrestleMania, when before the Undertaker's match got announced, I kind of fantasy book myself in my head sometimes, you know, just for the...
That's what we do.
And I go, you know what? If they really wanted to make me... they'd put me debut match surprise, like mystery opponent versus Undertaker. I'll come out as the Demon, and, you know, even if I lose,
you still win.
I still win.
Yeah,
right. And that's what I used to think. I also used to think, if I'm gonna debut on Raw, I want to kick the door down and I want to beat Roman Reigns on my first night. And I'm not kidding.
Really?
I've said that out loud to some of my friends. I said, that's how you make a debut. You go in and you beat the top guy.
Yeah.
And I literally... like,
you got one down.
Yeah, I got one
down. You never know, man.
So, you know, I like to like put things out there in the universe.
Yeah, that's right.
You know, it'll all come back. So hopefully I'll get that match. I will get that match.
You will. It's going to happen. Yeah, and you heard it here first. I booked it. Yeah. All right, dude. Sunday, huge, huge match. It's good to have you part of the team. And I'm telling you right now, watch out for Ballerween this year. There's going to be thousands of kids.
Ballerween.
Woo! So great to have Finn Balor on the team at Raw. Been waiting for this to happen since I had him on Talk as Jericho last year, since I worked with him in Japan last year, and now I'm waiting for the Demon to get in the ring with The Undertaker, for one, and for two, to become the new WWE Universal Champion. Can he do it? Hey, he's got a 50-50 shot. Seth Rollins versus Finn Balor this Sunday at SummerSlam for the brand new WWE Universal Championship. I will be there. Of course, it's Jericho and Owens against Enzo and Cass. That's going to be a lot of fun. It's a huge show. Check it out only live on the WWE Network. And don't forget to check out on March 15th, 2017, when it's the biggest podcast ever. Mick Foley joins Talk is Jericho. The countdown has begun. 207 days left until the biggest podcast ever. All right, just changing the voice up there. Thanks again to you guys for supporting the great sponsors. A lot of them this week. Hey, man, we're hot. What can I say? What can I tell you? DDPYoga.com/Jericho. Change your life. Get in the best fitness shape of your life. Get 20% off the DDP Yoga program plus 3 months full access to the DDP Yoga Now app. Remember, I've lost 12 pounds in 3 weeks, with DDP Yoga being a big reason for that. Also, DraftKings, thank you to them. Use my promo code Y2J to play for free with your first deposit. Loot Crate, the promo code is TALK. Then, of course, Buffalo Wild Wings. Go check that out. Beer, sports, food, wings, all that great stuff you can get. And True Car, the fastest way to buy a brand new or used car. And a big thanks to Amazon. They've been with this podcast since the very beginning. Remember, just go to them links, podcast1.com. Click on the Killer Deals button in the top right corner of the page. Then hit the Talk is Jericho button. Got those links in USA, UK, and Canada. And every time you use them links, Amazon kicks back a small percentage to this show to help us cover our production costs. You can buy anything you want. There's no extra fees or hidden charges. Just go to podcast1.com. Click on the Killer Deals button in the top right corner of the page. Then hit the Talk is Jericho button. Thank you so much. Go back and listen to Who's Hot and Who's Not, a show from a couple days ago with Team Tiger Awesome. Subscribe to their podcast if you like it. Check out the 80s teen sex comedy show with Eli Roth. That was hilarious. Lots of great stuff. The Stuck Mojo podcast was killer. New Metallica song. That was amazing as well. Working on getting them on the show. Lots of cool stuff. Keep listening right now for the 60-second AP News headlines coming up next. And coming up next Wednesday right here on Talk is Jericho, I got one of the most controversial figures in MTV reality game show history. I got Johnny Bananas is going to be here after he won Challenge Rivals. You'll hear all about it, how he basically stabbed his partner in the back to win the big cash prize. I think it was $275,000, whatever it was. Everyone's talking about Johnny Bananas, and he told me some great, great stories about what they have to go through for these reality shows and all of these wacky places like Mexico and Peru and Russia, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. All the stuff they have to eat, the intestines they have to eat and all this stuff. Crazy stuff. MTV Challenge champion. He's been champion. I think he's been in 12 shows and won like 6 of them. Johnny Bananas is going to be here. Very interesting guest. We'll see you next week with a big giveaway.
You can download new episodes of Talk is Jericho every Wednesday and Friday at podcast1.com. That's podcastone.com.